Free not only from the sins of this life, but from the sins of many, many thousands of other lives. He has already undergone true atonement for all his sins, sinful actions. If one atones according to the directions of the Shastras, one does not actually become free from sinful reactions. But if one chants the holy name of the Lord, even a glimpse of such chanting can immediately free one from all sins. Chanting the glories of the Lord's holy name awakens all good fortune. Therefore, there is no doubt that Ajamila, being completely free from all sinful reactions, should not be punished by Yamaraj. As they were saying this, the Vishnudutas released Ajamila from the ropes of the Yamadutas and left for their own abode. The Brahmana Ajamila, however, offered his respectful obeisances to the Vishnudutas. He could understand how fortunate he was to have chanted the holy name of Narayana at the end of his life. Indeed, he could realize the full significance of this good fortune. Having thoroughly understood the discussion between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, he became a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He lamented very much for how very sinful he had been, and he condemned himself again and again. Finally, because of his association with the Vishnudutas, Ajamila, his original consciousness aroused, gave up everything and went to Hardwar, where he engaged in devotional service without deviation, always thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the Vishnudutas went there, seated him on a golden throne, and took him away to Vaikuntha Loka. In summary, although the sinful Ajamila meant to call his son the holy name of Lord Narayana, even though chanted in the preliminary stage, Namavas, was able to give him liberation. Therefore, one who chants the holy name of the Lord with faith and devotion is certainly exalted. He is protected even in his material conditional life. Summary. So we're hearing about probably the most famous near-death experience in the history of the universe. Many people nowadays are intrigued by hearing of near-death experiences. There's this whole division of perceptual studies at the University of Virginia that studies these kind of things. And I was looking at their website the other day, and they said if you have any near-death experiences that you want to report, contact us. And I don't think they included this one in their study, so I was thinking about sending them this story to see if, you know, so they can include that in their research paper. So this is a kind of mostly when people have near-death experiences, they see like a light at the end of the tunnel, or they hear voices, or sometimes they even describe exactly what, you know, like the Yamadutas and going down to hell. They have very vivid descriptions of like really horrible looking creatures taking them down to hell and being suffocated. And so many, and then some people have a vision, you know, near-death experiences of, I don't know, going like a heavenly region, or like kind of like this really bright region, or there's different experiences that one has. But none of those experiences had a philosophical discussion between the order carriers of death and the order carriers of Vishnu, you know, arguing about who has jurisdiction over the soul of Ajamila. No, I mean, nobody has that experience of, at least described in the recorded papers. So this is quite unique, and I'm sure they'd be very interested to hear about this account. So the order carriers of Vishnu, or they caught the Yamadutas doing something improper. You know, they caught him doing something wrong. And the Vishnudutas, they gave the Yamadutas a chance to explain themselves. They said, what are you doing and why are you doing what you're doing? They obviously knew that they were doing something wrong, but, you know, instead of just outrightly chastising them, they gave them a chance to explain themselves. So they asked a bunch of questions, and the Yamadutas answered. And now we're going to hear how the Vishnudutas were not at all satisfied with their answers, and they're going to give it to him. So this is where we're going to start today in text 1. Text 1. Shri Badaraya Nirvacha Evante Bhagavaduta Yamaduta Bibhashitam Upadhar Yata Tan Rajan Pratyahur Nayako Vidaha Shri. Oh, sorry. Anyway, if you want to chant, I guess you can chant. Shri Badaraya Nirvacha Nivamte Bhagavaduta Yamaduta Vibhashitam Upadaya Tadrajan Pratyahur Nayako Vidaha. Shri Badaraya Nirvacha Vamte Bhagavaduta Namaduta Vibhashitam Adhata Tandadam Pratyaho Nayako Vidaha. Shri Badaraya Nirvacha. Shukadev Goswami, the son of Vyasadev, said, Nevam, thus, te, they, Bhagavat Duta, the servants of Lord Vishnu, Yamaduta, by the servants of Yamaraj, Abhibhashitam, what was spoken, Upadharya, hearing, Ata, then, Tan, unto them, Rajan, O King, Pratyahu, replied properly, Nayako Vidaha, being conversant in good arguments or good logic. Translation, Shukadev Goswami said, my dear King, the servants of Lord Vishnu are always very expert in logic and arguments. After hearing the statements of the Yamadutas, they replied as follows. So the Vishnudutas were actually hearing what the Yamadutas had to say. You know, sometimes if we find someone doing something wrong, we might not try to hear what they have to say before immediately chastising them. We might just go off on them without really understanding what their intentions were behind doing what they're doing, what the reasons were. But the Vishnudutas are a little bit more conscious, and they first ask, okay, well, why are you doing what you're doing? The Yamadutas explained, and then after fully understanding their intention and everything about the situation, then they're going to say what they're going to say. You know, I don't know, like if someone doesn't come to Mangalartik or something, you know, we might have the urge to just say, you know, where were you? How come you're not coming to Mangalartik? Or, you know, we might get on their case. But a little bit more mature approach would say, oh, I noticed that you weren't there for Mangalartik. You're not feeling well or something? Or what? For the last, you know, you try to understand, like, why they didn't come. And if someone gives you, like, an answer, like, oh, I was up late preaching to the new guests, something, we were up, you know, past 10 o'clock talking about Krishna consciousness or something, therefore I couldn't wake up in the morning. Okay, then there's grounds for, okay, then there's grounds for correction, and okay, that's obviously not proper, something. So anyway, move on to the next verse. There's no purport to that one. Text 2. Shri Vishnu Dutta Uchuhu Aho kashtam dharma drisham adharma sprishate shabham yatra dandyeshva papeshu dando yadriyate vrita. Translation, the Vishnu Dutta said, Alas, how painful it is that irreligion is being introduced into an assembly where religion should be maintained. Indeed, those in charge of maintaining the religious principles are needlessly punishing a sinless, unpunishable person. Report. The Vishnudutas accused the Yamadutas of violating the religious principles by attempting to drag Ajamila to Yamaraj for punishment. Yamaraj is the officer appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to judge religious and irreligious principles and to punish people who are irreligious. However, if completely sinless people are punished, the entire assembly of Yamaraj is contaminated. This principle applies not only in the assembly of Yamaraj, but throughout human society as well, also. So that's a pretty obvious point. Any department that you, in any department, if one person screws up and does something wrong in a department, then the whole department gets contaminated. I used to be in the process design group in my company. I was working as a chemical engineer, and I used to be in the process design group, and we used to design things. Like, I remember I designed like a chemical reactor or something, and if I screwed up, like if I had a bad calculation and we designed the thing and it wasn't able to withstand the temperatures and pressures of that particular process, then everyone would blame the process design group. Like, you guys are totally not designing this equipment properly. What's wrong with you guys? And that's just an obvious point. So, and usually the bulk of the responsibility goes to the head of the department, like Yamaraj here. He would be considered like not doing his duty properly, although he's, you know, obviously when he's a Mahajan. So the Vishnudutas didn't want to see Yamaraj contaminated or his department contaminated in any way. Okay, next paragraph. In human society, properly maintaining religious principles is the duty of the king's court or the government. Unfortunately, in this yuga, Kali Yuga, the religious principles are tampered with, and the government cannot properly judge who is to be punished and who is not. It is said that in the Kali Yuga, if one cannot spend money in court, one cannot get justice. Indeed, in courts of justice, it is often found that magistrates are bribed for favorable judgments. So I was just talking with somebody the other day. They were saying that in India, this is especially true in India, like there are cases that go on for decades and decades not being solved because they don't know who should be punished or who should not be punished. Forgot who was, maybe it was a debated, I don't remember. Somebody was saying that they had like a case when they were young, like 20 or something, and then they finally resolved it when the guy was like 40 or 50 years old. So, you know, the courts don't really know who should be judged or who should not be judged. And in order, if you do want to get something done, you have to bribe the judge to get what you want. This is particularly true in India. I'm sure it's true everywhere. I know, like, some of those really, really tough cases, like the Supreme Court has to deal with here in the United States. Some of them are very interesting cases. If you look at what they have to decide on, it's not easy. It's very complex to decide who should be punished and who should not be punished. And a lot of philosophy classes you go to in like college, and they look at these Supreme Court cases because there's a lot of philosophy behind, you know, the different dynamics of morality and who's at fault. And so it's very difficult. But, you know, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a high court magistrate. So he had to deal with these cases all the time. But, you know, he used to go in the courtroom with tilak and double-sized, you know, tulsi beads. And he used to make decisions very strongly and very quickly. You know, they came in, said their case, immediately gave him the punishment or whatever, move up next case. And then, so he's very quick and efficient, and his judgments were always good. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, sometimes religious men who preach the Krishna consciousness movement, for the benefit of the entire populace, are arrested and harassed by the police and courts. The Vishnudutas, who are Vaishnavas, lamented for these very regrettable facts. Because of their spiritual compassion for all the fallen souls, Vaishnavas go out to preach according to the standard method of all religious principles. But unfortunately, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, Vaishnavas who have dedicated their lives to preaching the glories of the Lord are sometimes harassed and punished by courts on false charges of disturbing the peace. So, there's so many examples of this. Like, just look at the history of ISKCON, you'll see this going on. Perhaps like the most striking examples of this are what the devotees had to go through in Russia or in the former Soviet Union. I'm sure Alex can tell us all about really amazing stories. I know in 1981, there was the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. They had this journal called Communist. I don't know what it is in Russian. And the head of the KGB, they had an article there, and they wrote that the three greatest threats to the Soviet way of life is Western culture, rock and roll music, and Hare Krishna. So this is how the government was thinking in Russia when Krishna consciousness was being spread there. So the government was trying anything possible to stop the spreading of this preaching of Krishna consciousness, and you know, they did very extreme things. Prabhupada, when he went to Russia, he was only there for 4 days. And in those 4 days, he met, you know, some people, but he met this one young Russian guy named Anatoly, I think. And he just focused in on this one young guy named Anatoly. And he trained him up in Krishna consciousness for however long he was there in that short period of time of 4 days. And then just 2 or 3 days after meeting him, he gave him initiation, and he gave him the name Ananta Shantidas. And this devotee, really amazing devotee, he imbibed, you know, what Prabhupada was teaching him, and he told him to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya all over Russia. And he did it amazingly in like the most adverse conditions. He was able to do it. So this Ananta Shantidas, he used to go from village to village in Russia and, you know, preach, tell people about Krishna consciousness, very underground, because if he did it openly, he would get arrested immediately. So he often did get arrested. You know, he used to go to a village, preach, get arrested, get out, go to another village, preach, get arrested, and then he did this all over Russia. And he didn't really have any books or anything to preach, so what he used to do was, he really got into prasadam distribution. So what he used to do is he used to offer roses to the deities, or to pictures or something. He used to offer roses to the deities, and then he used to dress in like a very slick white suit and a colorful tie, and he used to go to people in Russia, or former Soviet Union, and tell people, if you smell this flower, you'll get a chance to be a human being in your next life. So he used to go around and do this to everybody, and then when the KGB asking him, what the heck are you doing? I used to say, oh, I'm just celebrating the fact that I'm in love. You know? So he used to go around and do, this is how he was spreading Krishna consciousness. Because right when Prabhupada left the Soviet Union after visiting Moscow for 4 days, he went to London, and then he told one of the devotees in London, Mandakini Devidasi, to go to Russia and marry this Ananta Shantidas. So she came, and they were married, and they kind of tag-teamed about spreading Krishna consciousness all over Russia. Then in 1983, he got arrested again for preaching Krishna consciousness, and he They put him into a psychiatric ward, and Russian psychiatric wards are really bad places. And they used to inject him with these really horrible drugs, haloperidol and sulfazine, which were really messed up with really like made you convulse your muscles to convulse and your serious mental deterioration and may give you high fevers and pain and hallucinations. And their whole goal was to try to change this guy's philosophy on life. And they did this for three or four years or something. He was living in the psychiatric ward, being administered drugs regularly like this, just so that they could change his philosophy in life. Then whenever they allowed him to go after such intense treatment, his wife came to pick him up or something, and the doctor said, "Wow, this person's mind is very difficult to change." You know, first they said that it takes time to change one's view on life and reality. It takes time to change that. So give us a number of years and we can do it. But so anyway, this was an example of how governments aren't so proper in discharging proper punishments, because they're and this is all over the place. Liberia is another, you know, stark example, and all over the world. So, and later when the Soviet Union collapsed, you know, they noticed, because of Ananta Shantidas's efforts of preaching Krishna consciousness in Russia, there was something like over 400 centers established, which is quite, you know, that there were like hidden underground, like groups of people meeting and talking about Krishna consciousness, but because of his efforts. And he actually just left his body last June, so maybe 10 months ago he left his body. So this is, so the devotees have been glorifying him for his services. Okay, so the Vishnu Dutas here are speaking on the principles of Dharma. They're responding to the Yamadutas' claims based on the principles of Dharma. So the Yamadutas, they thought that they were only considering Trigunya Dharma, or Dharma ordained in the Shastras, like ordinary Dharma. They were not considering Bhagavad Dharma in their estimation of who should be punished and who should not be punished. So this is the point that the Vishnu Dutas are going to try to correct. Okay, so we'll go on to text 3. Is there any comments or questions on anything so far? Okay, so we'll go to text 3. Prajanam pitaro yecha shastara sarvasama yadi syatesh vaishamyam kamyanti sharanam praja. Translation: a king or government official should be so well qualified that he acts as a father, maintainer, and protector of the citizens because of affection and love. He should give the citizens good advice and instructions according to the standard scriptures, and should be equal to everyone. Yamaraj does this, for he is the supreme master of justice, and so do those who follow in his footsteps. However, if such persons become polluted and exhibit partiality by punishing an innocent, blameless person, where will the citizens go to take shelter for their maintenance and security? Purport: the king, or in modern times the government, should act as the guardian of the citizens by teaching them the proper goal of life. The human form of life is especially meant for realization of oneself and one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because this cannot be realized in animal life. The duty of the government, therefore, is to take charge of training all the citizens in such a way that by a gradual process they will be elevated to the spiritual platform and will realize the self and his relationship with God. This principle was followed by kings like Maharaj Yudhishthir, Maharaj Parikshit, Lord Ramachandra, Maharaj Ambarish, and Prahlad Maharaj. The leaders of the government must be very honest and religious, because otherwise all the affairs of the state will suffer. Unfortunately, in the name of democracy, rogues and thieves are electing other rogues and thieves to the most important posts in the government. Recently, this has been proven in America, where the president had to be condemned and dragged down from his post by the citizens. President Nixon. This is not only one case, but there are many others. Because of the importance of the Krishna consciousness movement, people should be Krishna conscious and should not vote for anyone who is not Krishna conscious. Then there will be actual peace and prosperity in the state. When a Vaishnava sees mismanagement in the government, he feels great compassion in his heart and tries his best to purify the situation by spreading the Hare Krishna movement. So this is the point. The Vishnudutas were seeing something wrong, mismanagement in the Justice Department, the Universal Cosmic Justice Department. So they tried to spread the Krishna consciousness movement by informing the Yamadutas about the glories of the Holy Name and Bhagavad Dharma. And here, the Vishnudutas are talking about the qualities of a king or the government and how they should behave. So they should, be guardian and protector of the citizens. In fact, they should rule in such a way that none of the citizens should have any anxiety, which was possible when these kings listed here were reigning, but now everyone's full of anxieties. This is described that when people are demoniac, the king was also responsible for everything being available. That they were even responsible that nature should supply enough grains and crops and things. Like, they were responsible for that, that the rains come on time, that everything happens as it should. When people are more demoniac, then nature withholds her supplies. When people are more pious or God-conscious, then she supplies amply. So the king mostly did this by trying to make sure that the citizens were being trained properly in self-realization and his relationship with God. Is there anything on this text anyone wants to say? Yes. Could be muted. You hit the red two button above there. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Okay.
One of the clauses we mentioned here, out of it looks like four, is sama, that the leader should see equally everyone, and that we can. I'm sure we can understand it in terms of, like, let's say even Dhritarashtra is maybe a good example of not seeing equally his sons and the citizens and so on, and that led to.
Yeah, that's why transcendental knowledge is told to Raja Rishis in the Bhagavad Gita. That generally, the kings were supposed to be, they were saintly kings. I know Krishna Smarana Prabhu, when he was giving a lecture, and he said that the leader should be the most advanced, realized person, the most knowledgeable, the most everything. Because in the next verse we'll see that, because people follow the example of the leader in society, so if the leader isn't Krishna conscious, then the people aren't going to become Krishna conscious because they're following the leader. Yeah, it's especially tough in our in spiritual institution. I mean, Prabhupada described it like we're in a battlefield or something, and it's kind of like an emergency time, and hey, the general just got shot, we need a leader, and then they just kind of pull whoever's available to do the needful. Like, okay, we're in a battle here, we need leaders. Okay, you might not be qualified, but come on anyway, let's you get the post. At least right now, it seems like we are. Because who I don't know who can see with equal vision. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. It's but if that's the case, then we can. That's how at least the subordinates can see the leaders. If they're not proper, well, maybe they were asked to do something like be a general in a battle when they didn't really. May or may not have been qualified for, but they were just doing the needful. They're trying their best, and okay, they might not have been perfect, but you at least like honor them for okay. Thanks for stepping in. We needed that. Thanks a lot. I surely wouldn't have been able to do that. So yeah, I know when devotees are asked to be temple presidents or something, it's like everybody, nobody wants to be temple president. So if somebody does it, they usually do it just as a service or something. And then there's empowerment. Like if somebody is asked to do that, there is empowerment in that instruction. Okay, can you please lead these devotees? They need leadership. And somebody asks you to do it, then empowerment can come. Sorry, as far as I can go. I don't know. Anybody, I don't know, Gokulananda, he might have more realizations on this subject. Okay, anything else? Okay, so we'll go to the next verse, text 4. Yad yad achadati sheyan itarastattadihate Sayat pramanam kurute, Translation: The mass of people follow the example of a leader in society and imitate his behavior. They accept as evidence whatever the leader accepts. So this is almost the same message as Bhagavad Gita 3:21. Whatever great action, whatever actions a great man performs, common men follow. Whatever standards he sets by his exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Purport: Although Ajamila was not punishable, the Yamadutas were insisting on taking him away to Yamaraj for punishment. This was a dharma, contrary to religious principles. The Vishnudutas feared that if such irreligious acts were allowed, the management of human society would be spoiled. In modern times, the Krishna consciousness movement is trying to introduce the right principles of management for human society. But unfortunately, the governments of Kali Yuga do not properly support the Hare Krishna movement because they do not appreciate its valuable service. The Hare Krishna movement is the right movement for ameliorating the fallen condition of human society, and therefore governments and public leaders in every part of the world should support this movement to completely rectify humanity's sinful condition. So, since people follow the leaders, the Vishnudutas here are trying to make sure the leaders are acting properly. So they feared that if they allowed the Yamadutas, who were supposed to be in charge of administering justice, failed in their duty, then the human society would look at that example and they would also fail and leading society. So this is why Prabhupada really wanted an ideal class of men. He wanted to create an ideal class of men in which just by seeing these ideal devotees, society would be benefited. You know, they would see such ideal behavior being exhibited, ideal character, ideal aim of life, and they would see that, and they might look at where they are, and they might feel a little ashamed, like, oh, ashamed, I'm not there, but I want to be there. So it gives people something to look forward to strive for. I know, and here it saying if the governments do not properly support the Hare Krishna movement because they do not appreciate its valuable service. Mostly what people appreciate about, like, some, a lot of times governments don't appreciate the Hare Krishna movement so much, or if they do appreciate it, they appreciate it for, like, its food for life thing, or they really like the fact that they were able, like, Prabhupada was able to convince young Americans to stop doing drugs. That was like a, okay, the Hare Krishnas, they're good because they, my kid was a drug addict, now he's not, okay. So they appreciate those aspects. They usually don't appreciate, oh, they're helping people to develop love for God or things like that. But they generally like the, okay, and they don't know drugs are bad. So they appreciate that aspect. And if governments are, another thing is that if governments are really strong governments, they can stop sinful behavior. Prabhupada said like that. If the governments are very strong, they can actually reduce or eliminate like the sinful activities, illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, intoxication. They could stop it. But the problem is that our government officers themselves are engaged in all of these activities, and if they themselves are engaged in these activities, they're not going to be able to stop others from engaging in these activities. It's like a father who smokes or something, and the father tells his kid, you shouldn't smoke. The kid's like, you're smoking. What? And then it might not work. But on the other hand, let's say, you know, the kid doesn't smoke, or whatever, and, you know, then he becomes like an ideal example, and the father might see the ideal example of his son and say, oh, okay, well, he's like an ideal example, and he might also try to change his own addiction, or, you know, his own behavior, so, anyway, that's there. Is there anything else anyone want to bring up on this verse? Yes, Manoj. Probably because the battery is low. Do you have another charge, another battery? Yeah, well, in the previous purport, when a Vaishnava sees mismanagement in the government, he feels great compassion in his heart, and he tries his best to purify the situation by spreading the Hare Krishna movement. So, you know, as far as becoming one of them to try to, you know, I'll become a whatever, try to become the president of the United States as a devotee. And in order to do that, you might adopt certain corrupt practices. I don't know if that's encouraged. I think Prabhupada would be more interested in just spreading the Hare Krishna movement. And then if the people change, then naturally they'll want Krishna conscious leaders. So they'll vote for a devotee to become the president instead of somebody just doing whatever the conventional means of becoming president are. You know, they raise money, campaigns, or whatever they do, like on a material level, to become president, and then at the same time, all the while trying to be a devotee. I don't know if that method is necessarily encouraged by Prabhupada, because you probably become pretty contaminated in the whole process, and it probably wouldn't work also. But I mean, Prabhupada did want to say, he did say that the success of the Krishna consciousness movement would be when they saw tilak on the foreheads of the high court judges, like the Supreme Court. He said then our movement would be successful. So ultimately, that is perhaps what Prabhupada had in mind, as far as we should be in these positions. Devotees should be in the positions of leadership, the, you know, Supreme Court justices and everything. But the way to get there, I don't think we want to sacrifice any of our principles in order to get there. I think it's more of just a matter of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement so much that people will want it. That's my understanding. Anything else? Okay, we'll go on. We'll do another text 5 and 6, which are together. This will be the last text we'll do today. Yasyam keshira adhaya loka svapiti nirvitra svayam dharmam adharmam va nahi vedayata pasu sakatam nyarpitatmanam Grita Maitrama Chaitanam Vishrambaniyo Bhutanam Sagrino Dogdhum Arhate. Translation: people in general are not very advanced in knowledge by which to discriminate between religion and irreligion. See that? The innocent, unenlightened citizen is like an ignorant animal, sleeping in peace with its head on the lap of its master, faithfully believing in the master's protection. If a leader is actually kind-hearted and deserves to be the object of a living entity's faith, how can he punish or kill a foolish person who has fully surrendered in good faith and friendship? Purport: the Sanskrit word Vishvastakata, which doesn't actually appear in the verse, by the way, refers to one who breaks faith or causes a breach of trust. The mass of people should always feel security because of the government's protection. And therefore, how regrettable it is for the government itself to cause a breach of trust and put the citizen in difficulty for political reasons. We actually saw during the partition days in India that although Hindus and Muslims were living together peacefully, manipulation by politicians suddenly aroused feelings of hatred between them, and thus the Hindus and Muslims killed one another over politics. This is a sign of Kali Yuga. In this age, animals are kept nicely sheltered, completely confident that their masters will protect them. But unfortunately, as soon as the animals are fat, they are immediately sent for slaughter. Such cruelty is condemned by Vaishnavas, like the Vishnudutas. Indeed, the hellish conditions already described await the sinful men responsible for such suffering. One who betrays the confidence of a living entity who takes shelter of him in good faith, whether that living entity be a human being or an animal, is extremely sinful. Extremely sinful. Because such betrayals now go unpunished by the government, all of human society is terribly contaminated. The people of this age are therefore described as Manda, Sumanda, Matayo, Manda, Bhagya, Yahu, Patruta. As a consequence of such sinfulness, men are condemned, Manda. Their intelligence is unclear, Sumanda, Matayaha. They are unfortunate, Manda, Bhagya. And therefore they are always disturbed by many problems, Upadrutaha. This is their situation in this life. And after death, they are punished in hellish conditions. So, and it said that the greatest sin that you can do, like the worst thing that you can do, is if somebody puts their head on your lap and you slit their throats. This is the worst. Somebody's taking shelter of you and you don't give them protection. So, I mean, it's not, you know, it's bad to like kill the body, you know, like to kill somebody. It's like a bad thing. But even worse than that is killing a person's or breaking a person's faith. So, you know, Jajangnath said before that, you know, we're composed of faith. Like the living entity, the spirit soul is composed of faith. So if you break somebody's faith, that's like that's very serious because you're getting to the soul level. You're actually doing some real damage instead of just, you know, it's temporarily damaging some material body which is going to decay anyway. So if you break somebody's faith, that's like really the worst thing you can do. And that's what happens when people take shelter of somebody like, if you're going to accept the post of being like a guru or spiritual master, you really have to, you know, be able to deliver your dependents from the cycle of birth and death and give them Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if you don't, you might break their faith because they put their faith that you can do that. And if you don't do that and you do something else, then it's a blow, as Jagannath says. So that's why it's advised to not become a guru, not become a father, not become a king, not become even a relative, or you know, unless you can actually give protection to your subordinates and protect them from, deliver them from the cycle of birth and death. Yes, Imanchu Prabhu.
I'm just trying to understand this particular verse. Are they just making a general point about administration? Or is this specifically related to the Yamadutas? Because are they trying to imply that Ajamil took shelter of the Yamadutas? You know what I'm saying?
Well, exactly? Ajamil is like he's a living entity in the universe. The Yamadutas are meant to administer justice. They're like the justice department of the universe. And so they're like the universal government. And Ajamil is like a citizen in the government. And the government's supposed to give protection to the citizens and not punish them unnecessarily or kill them. So, or take them to hell. And that's what's going on here. So Jamil or somebody in a Jamil's situation, they might say, oh, I'm being punished unjustly, and they might lose their whole faith in the government and authority in general. So this is the problem, is that you lose your faith in authority, and then therefore you don't want to put your faith in anybody. And if you don't put your faith in anybody like a spiritual master, then you're not going to make any advancement in spiritual life, and you're condemned. So that's why it's really bad to... this is why this is like the worst thing you can do. So, anyway, that's just clarification of the verse. Is that okay? Into those situations, yeah. You try to avoid it. You do everything you can. Because on one hand, you're expected to become like a good devotee. But the more you become a good devotee, the more you get pushed into these situations, where these positions that you don't really want to be in, but you just are forced to. And then, in one sense, it's good because it forces you to come up to, you know, come up to the standard, but it's, I don't know, it's scary. Of course, you could always just be a bad devotee and not have that problem. Be irresponsible. Be, you know, some devotees take that approach, like in the Bhagavatam. They're purposely irresponsible because they don't want any kind of positions of leadership. They don't want disciples. They don't want any of this. So they act externally very irresponsible. It's very purposeful too. They purposely act irresponsible just because they don't want to deal with any of that stuff. They just want to focus on Krishna consciousness. Let people think of me whatever they want to think. I'm just going to focus on Krishna and be irresponsible purposely. Yeah. That's another reason why it's tough being a manager in Krishna consciousness or in any kind of spiritual institution, because you might have to deal with people like this. And if you get on their case, then it could be offensive because they're actually like a pure devotee. But they're being irresponsible. So you don't know if they're doing it on purpose because they're actually a pure devotee, or if they're just irresponsible and they need like some correction. So it's another issue that comes up. Okay, anything else? All right, I think we'll stop here. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Okay, we'll have our little brahmachari meeting downstairs now. So everyone can come.